Carmageddon. Carmageddon. Boy, we heard a lot about that around the rest of the country this week, only to find out that traffic's been pretty good in L.A. this weekend. God. If that had been like Tulsa, that never would have made the news, you know? But it's a Coast to Coast AM. It's Ian Punnett. It's Saturday night. And wherever it is that you find yourself, I hope it's someplace comfortable and safe. I know that there's some unstable weather patterns across the country with these temperatures getting way high. So I hope that doesn't mean tornadoes for you. And if it does, I hope your local station will interrupt. Otherwise, we'll keep you company tonight with a great show I'm going to say it's like a double feature in the theater. We'll talk more about Jeremy Wade and River Monsters coming up next hour. Best show on Animal Planet, period. But fascinating guy, and what a story to tell. Almost died a couple of times chasing after these river monsters. It's not the fact that these giant fish are always found that makes the show so interesting. It's that he actually does find stuff. Like, I love Monster Quest on History Channel, but they never actually find anything. And Jeremy Wade does, and he's still trying to figure out what that image was in what is often been dubbed the Amazonian Nessie photo. And we'll talk more about that coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. This hour, I can't wait to talk to Tom Shadyac. I've enjoyed his work for years. You have too. Ace Ventura, The Nutty Professor, the reinterpretation of The Nutty Professor, not a remake. It's a reimagining of The Nutty Professor. Liar Liar, Patch Adams, Bruce Almighty, Evan Almighty, just to name some of the movies that he's been involved with that he wrote or produced or directed or all of them. And then this new documentary called I Am, which you might have heard about, but you need to know more about, especially since it's coming out on DVD. And we'll tell you all about that coming up next with Tom Shadyac himself on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. So Tom Shadyac had the type of solid, middle-class, happy family upbringing in Virginia, the kind that anybody, I think, would be proud of, and was already successful as a young man when he was, went on to college and did well financially and got scholarships and, you know, it's kind of living the American dream. Ends up in Hollywood, where he is going to grad school and writing jokes for Bob Hope and becomes a director and very successful. And that's kind of how the story of Tom Shadyac begins. But it's a different turn. It's a different twist that starts this adventure, which we will be talking about this hour, a documentary called I Am. But let's bring in Tom Shadyac now on Coast to Coast and talk a little bit more about that. Good morning. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. Are we catching you in Malibu at your mobile home?
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. You wouldn't feel sorry for me if you could see where
No.
we are.
No, I've read about it a little bit.
We have a gorgeous community here, and there's a full moon outside the window, and the waves are crashing, so we're all good.
Yeah, I've read a little bit about that mobile home park. It is like you're way above that, but still, it's interesting how is. And I was just beginning to try to set the table a little bit for this conversation up by mentioning that you had this sort of, you know, solid connect the dots kind of life leading up to early success in Hollywood, taking you up to Ace Ventura, which was, you know, obviously a big, you know, a blockbuster at the box office. And then Hollywood opened up its doors for you. And you enjoyed the kind of success that a lot of people spend decades trying to get. And you got it pretty much right away, didn't you?
Well, I wouldn't say right away. I mean, I did start working right away, right out of college. I became a joke writer for Bob Hope, 20 plus years ago. And then, you know, I tried to find my way, wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then, you know, I went to grad school, and then I did get Ace Ventura. And that's when, you know, that, quote, dream happened. But, I've redefined success. You know, I got the success
sure.
that my culture laid out before me and told me was what I should aspire towards, which is, you know, being number one and accumulation of wealth and et cetera. And I found it I found it empty and that there was no real there. So
right.
I called it into question and began changing my life. And that's kind of where the story of I Am
sure.
picks up.
But even still, so it's a lot of success over a lot of years. I mean, not
yeah.
just, yeah, I mean, you had, it would be one thing if you had like one big movie, you know,
yeah.
but I mean, you had Ace Ventura, then The Nutty Professor, which by the way, I own. I mean, I've always
Bless
thought
you, my brother.
I really did. I bought that and I was like, that is just so good. I thought it was great performances from Eddie Murphy. I love the comedy club scene, the showdown scene.
Yeah,
I
that's
thought,
Dave Chappelle's first
yeah.
role in a movie. Yeah.
I thought it was just really one of the, it was such a clear reinterpretation of something. And I like the original Jerry Lewis, but I thought that was really brilliant what you did with it. I have to say.
Thank you. I mean, you know, I work with brilliant people. So my job really is to get the best out of people. And I've worked with these comic geniuses, and Eddie is a genius. And, you know, there was another genius on the rise, Dave Chappelle, and he brought some major comedy to the film and uniqueness
yep.
and perspective. And, you know, I've been blessed to work with some
yep.
amazing people. But I think there's a poison and a toxin in the way that we do business in our country, and not just our country, but sort of the Western model.
Sure.
It's this idea that you know, we own art and that art, you know, we can charge as much as we can for our talents and our services. And it creates this divide between people. And I didn't realize that I was participating in a vision of the way things work that was problematic. And,
yep.
and you know, Einstein saw it. Many people know Einstein quotes where he says that, you know, the problem in the world today is manifesting itself in the way we do business. He called it the anarchy of capitalist society. And I'm not a socialist, you know, it's not about the system, but it's about the people who are inhabiting and animating these systems. And I simply think we need to reexamine it. The reason the economy is broken is because it's not on long-term wise footing. It can't sustain. You just can't teach a philosophy to your kids to take all that you can, make sure you take for yourself, look out for number one, beat your neighbor, beat your competitor, always get the A, don't worry about the other kids. You know, in law school, you can't even help each other. You can't teach that model and expect it to sustain. It won't. It doesn't work in nature. It doesn't work for us. So,
well, a lot of people would look at all of that success that you had and then hear that you had felt like you had to reexamine it and to push away from that, and they would say, "What, the guy get hit in the head or something?"
Yeah,
and
you
it
did.
Really and you did. So you tell a story about how it is after all of this commercial success, all the personal wealth, that you ended up having an accident that changed your life.
Yeah. Well, I want to be very clear about the accident, because the accident did not cause me to change in terms of how I was walking in the world, meaning I had already started shifting my life long ago, some 10, 12 years ago. I had long ago called this stuff into question right after I did Liar, Liar. It just didn't feel right. All this wealth, you know, came my way, and it just didn't feel right. My instinct was I should give it back. There's other people who need it more. I have plenty, but I got caught up in things, and friends said, no, come on, you know, it's all good. But what happened was I had been changing my life, and about 3 years ago, I got post-concussion syndrome from a bike accident. I'm a mountain biker, and I surf a lot, and I got a routine concussion, but I'd taken enough concussion chips out of the bank. You only get so many, and it turned into post-concussion syndrome, and that's when the symptoms of a concussion don't go away. And I, after some time with this torturous condition, I thought I was going to die. And facing my own death caused me to want to make this film. I didn't want to die with my journey held inside of me. I wanted to share it with people. And I wanted to ask a question, which I had been asking, and I had uncovered a point of view, which is, what's wrong with our world? And why do we have this world? And is there something we can do to reinvent it? And so I started this journey and this film, very different film. But it does use humor. You know, I am the guy that directed Ace Ventura, so there's a lot of humor in the film.
There
it's a very
is.
Different documentary, and it's a very hopeful documentary.
Yeah. No, it's great. And so, and yet, then that's, I mean, that's, as a filmmaker, you know, creators create, filmmakers make films. So you, in exploring what was going on internally, you took a camera crew and you started going around the country and interviewing people and asking them the question is, what's wrong? What's wrong with us? What's wrong with this world?
Right, right.
And the film is the question and then also the answer.
Right, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. And by what's wrong with the world, I didn't want to know. I didn't want to hear the usual suspects. I didn't want to hear, well, there's too much war, there's poverty, there's disease, there's an environmental crisis. Those to me are symptoms. I wanted to look for the fundamental root cause. What is the thing? How are we behaving that is creating all these crises? And I believe that there is a way we're looking at things that is creating these. And if we can shift that, find that and shift that, it said the definition of intelligence is the ability to identify primary causes. And if we could identify the primary cause, then we can have a conversation about how to fix things. We know something is broken. One of my dear friends is the best-selling poet in America. Her name is Mary Oliver. And one of the first things she said to me is, Tom, you know this world is broken. And by that, it's not the world, it's the way we're walking and operating in the world. And I wanted to have that conversation.
Again, we're talking with Tom Shadyac, and the movie is called I Am. When is it out on DVD?
Soon. We're still in theaters, so we got to finish that run up. And then we're going to do a television run. We'll most likely be on Oprah's new network. She's a big fan of the film and has really been a supporter. And then we'll be on DVD probably mid-late fall.
Okay. So and for a lot of people who don't know, you may have heard about the movie and you might think, oh, this is just kind of your typical sort of woo-woo new age stuff. But it's better than just anything you've heard because the conversation goes deeper. It's not as, if you don't mind me saying, it's not as platitudinal as what a lot of things, you know, it doesn't sound kind of like there's a lot of bumper sticker theology that can come out of a conversation like this. And you resist that in the movie I Am.
Well, it's not, you know, it's not, it's funny, you know, to hear new age sometimes associated with this kind of a film or this particular film, because it's anything but new age. The ideas in this film are ancient. We've had 4 billion years of biological history. And we look at that in this film. We've had ancient mystics, philosophers, poets, all saying the same thing. You know, that's the kind of stuff we look at in the film. There's a lot of evidence to show us who we are as people, what the operating manual is, if you will, of how things thrive, how biological systems, how a species like humans survive and thrive. And that's what we talk about in the movie. And it's a really positive message because our very biology, the very nature of who we are, tends toward cooperation. And yet we're running our systems based on competition, on this idea that we're all about competition. And Darwin didn't even, you've seen the movie, and it says that Darwin didn't even come up with the term survival of the fittest. He only mentioned it twice. He said the word love 95 times in The Descent of Man. And we don't get that story because our culture is humming to the competitive model.
And don't get me wrong. I think almost everything a lot of things I hear out of the new age side of things are very ancient. They're just kind of retreaded in a different way. And I really liked what you were getting at is that the universe, as you discuss in the movie I Am, is participatory, right? This is often a theme here on Coast to Coast. We talk about how we have to stay engaged with all of the other organisms that are around us and all of the different systems, the ones that we can see and the ones that we can't see too.
Right. Yeah. And we affect those organisms and they affect us. So, one of the truths is that there's this connectivity between all things and science is showing it now, you know, quantum physics, has the entanglement theory where if you separate two particles that have ever been connected, if you change the rotation or spin of one, the other one across infinite space will change at the same time, and that's not possible. You need time for that other particle to be affected, but no, it's instant simultaneous entanglement, and those things are showing that there's a fabric. Space isn't empty. There's a fabric in space. It's called the field. Einstein said the field is the only reality, and so there's this connection to things. So it's why some of our moralists like Martin Luther King would say, I can't be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. He knew that we were connected with each other, and he knew that's why it even feels good. Our biology, our evolution is telling us the way we're hardwired, it feels good to help another person for a reason because there is this connection. Because, you know, the truth is we all come from the same parent. If you want to look at the history of Earth, we all have the same parents that go back to sub-Saharan Africa. That's already been proven. And if you want to go back further than that, 13 billion years ago, we all come from the same infinitesimal pinpoint prick of light or energy, whatever you call it, that created what we think was the Big Bang. So we all come from the same stuff. So we really are all, as the mystics knew, brothers and sisters. And yet we're not behaving that way. And so we have a broken model in front of us, and we can sense it, and we know it, and we're going to change it. We're beginning to change it.
Well, and I want to accent that thing you mentioned about quantum entanglement, because it's a big concept, and a lot of people are not familiar with it. You illustrate it very well in the movie I Am. Again, that any time two particles have been in contact with each other, even if you separate them over a great distance, they behave exactly the same at the same time, much like we talk about how twins might go in and buy the same couch at the same time on the same day in the same store,
right?
You know, one in South Carolina, the other one's in Southern California.
That's right.
And you can't explain
micro
it.
Level. That's right.
Right. Way cool. That whole quantum entanglement thing is really cool.
It's way cool, you know, and it doesn't make sense in the paradigm we're in right now that two particles at infinite distances, they're separate by infinite distances. If you change the spin of one, the other one changes at the same time, follows and mimics. That doesn't make sense. But if you think outside the paradigm and you think that there's connective tissue, let's say a string, if you will, a string between those particles, and one moves, that string would pull the other one. Well, that's probably what it looks like, what is happening. You know, that there is a field that everything rests on. That's why a mother can intuit when her daughter falls down. You know who came up with the EEG was Hans Berger, I believe was his name. And Hans had an accident when he was in the military in Germany, and his sister knew something had happened to Hans all the way across Germany. And that's why Hans said something traveled instantaneously. That same moment, my sister knew that I was facing this calamitous event. And
you know,
so he measured the brain waves, which wasn't ultimately what he was hoping to measure, but there is a connectivity.
This came up, I didn't mention this a couple weeks ago, but we had on one of the members of SEAL Team 6, right? This Navy SEAL team that went in and got Osama bin Laden. But this particular guy hadn't been with Navy SEAL Team 6 since Mogadishu, but he had been there for a long time, and he had suffered injuries in Mogadishu and had just written a book about what it was like to be a Navy sniper. But what he said was, he said something in the book, and I meant to mention it that night, and I forgot about it, but I think you'd find it interesting. As a sniper, he knows he can't. One of the things, once you've pinpointed your target, you look away. He said, he really does believe, and snipers have the belief that, like, we all feel like somebody's watching us, that even though they can be 2 miles away and looking at somebody in their scope, they look away until it's time to do their sniper thing, because they think that people will get hinky just because somebody's watching them, that we know as human beings when somebody is watching us. And
that's Rupert Sheldrake's work called The Sense of Being Stared At. Rupert Sheldrake did much studying of this phenomenon. You sort of feel that you're being stared at, so you turn.
Right.
And he studied the probability of you know, whether that's by chance or not, and it's well beyond chance. So we do have a feeling that we're being stared at. So, yes, that layman, that sniper, if you will, was sensing and intuiting what science is now, fringe science, because not many scientists are measuring this. We need more. But what we know is true.
You know what bothered me, though, is to think that my yogurt is eavesdropping on me.
Yes, that's right. Your yogurt
is
alive, my friend. Yeah,
This was a really
experiment in the. You want to explain it so people.
I'll tell you what I'll do. Let's hang on for that until after the break, because I'm afraid we'd get into it, then we'd stop. But the yogurt experiment really was freaky. I had to say that. Really, I've been walking past my refrigerator, thinking all day, looking in there, going, "I'm glad I got a thick door. They're going to be ratting on me."
And then, I haven't had yogurt since then. So,
yeah, I wouldn't blame you. You don't know who's eating who at
exactly,
that point. You know.
Exactly.
And then I want to talk about both argon atoms and the random number generators.
Oh, wow.
That part I really want to unpack about the movie. I Am, and we'll get to that coming up in just a minute. So thank you, Tom Shadyac, for hanging on the Director, writer, producer Tom Shadyac. Now the movie is I Am. Check it to see whether it's appearing in a theater near you, kind of like what Harry Shearer's doing with The Big Uneasy. Tom Shadyac is traveling around and occasionally introducing the movie too, but then coming up on TV and then out in the fall for DVD. But see it, go make a point to find out if somebody is showing I Am, and then go and see it. But, and he's done so many other, you know, amazing movies, written terrific movies, and life changed after that accident. And even as he said before that, we'll talk about where his life is now and how he perceives wealth and creativity and art and his future coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. And we'll get to a couple of questions, not many, maybe two or three by the end of this hour for Tom Shadyac, director, writer, producer, and the man behind I Am, which is still out in theaters, but coming to DVD this year. And then next hour, it's River Monsters with Jeremy Wade from the Animal Planet. He's got a book out about the River Monsters, but also he's got the first two seasons is out on DVD too. And you ought to go to coasttocoastam.com and go click onto some of the images that we're talking about, like the Amazon Nessie, the giant devil catfish, which is, he was one of the first to ever actually get an image of that, and a couple of these other, like the Goliath tigerfish. Holy smokes. These are freshwater fish, and Jeremy Wade finds them, travels the world to find them, and he still hasn't found them all. He's tracking them down one by one, river monsters, and we'll talk about that coming up next hour. But back to the conversation about how your yogurt is spying on you. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. The theme of the movie I Am, the documentary I Am from Tom Shadyac, is that the universe is participatory, and thought and emotion affects every living system, that we're all interconnected. And that there's lots of different ways that we can look at that and what the ramifications are if we choose not to live like that, and all of the benefits that would come if we were better about that. But the best illustration of that, I thought, came from the yogurt experiment. So, Tom, I'm going to have to ask, because if I said it, I don't think a lot of people would believe me, but you lived it and it was pretty cool. And you swear this was no... this is no Tom Shadyac special effects here.
No, this is right? not a special effect.
Okay.
And it surprised me as well that, you know, the principle behind it didn't surprise me, that we affect other things, but to see it demonstrated. Now, in the film, I don't say that this is science. It has to be studied and repeated, but something happened in the room. They sit me across from a bowl of yogurt that's in a Petri dish, and yogurt is a living system. Now, they hook up that yogurt to a magnetometer. So the yogurt is giving a baseline energy reading in a magnetometer. It registers at a zero point.
Right.
And then I sit across from the yogurt, and I'm not connected to the yogurt.
And you didn't think you were connected to the yogurt.
I am connected on
yes.
that whole other level.
Yeah,
but
you
I'm
didn't
not physically
think you were.
Connected to the yogurt
right.
as we would think of physical connection. There's
right.
no wire going from me to the yogurt, just
no.
me, and then the yogurt in front of me. And then a researcher asked me to recall certain emotional events in my life. And in the film, you know, I think of my agent immediately, because my agent had just called me and a star had just rejected a project that I was hoping to do. And he's a friend of mine, and it hurt my feelings. So it brought up feelings, and those feelings instantly registered on the yogurt. That's the theory, because that magnetometer yeah. needle basically flatlines. And then it happened repeatedly when I thought of my lawyer, who there were some emotional issues with, and other
right.
things. The yogurt needle moves, it's postulated,
yeah.
theorized that it's because my emotionality has an energy. Now, you know, when your spouse comes home or your boyfriend or girlfriend comes home, you can feel their energy. So we know this intuitively and experientially. So it makes sense to me that that energy that I have, my emotional shifts, can affect something else in front of me. Remember, years ago, they used to say you can talk to your plants and you can affect. They had all kinds of studies saying you can actually affect in a positive way the growth of your plants. It's similar to that. It's the idea that we actually have a connection. Living systems create energy, and energy moves out. It moves outward and affects other things.
Now, it was fascinating not just to see it actually happen, but also to see you while it was happening. And I'm sorry that your star friend hurt your feelings by not agreeing to be in the movie. I was surprised that it hurt the yogurt's feelings too.
Well, that's how connected we are. There's a kinship, and so that's why, you know, when someone in the movie, there's a conclusion that one of the scientists reaches. His name's Dean Radin. He's very well known in this field, and he says that means, if that's all true, that you don't even want to walk by a homeless guy without at least telling him that you care, because it affects you. It affects you. We all affect each other, you know. So it just suggests a whole different way of looking at things.
Should we ask the yogurt about how it feels about us about to eat it? That was the. I thought I want to say, is it okay if
I? I am.
Is it all right if I eat you and see what?
Yeah. I can't go in a pink berry. That's what I'm saying.
it's too emotionally draining
exactly.
to go in a pink
These
berry.
These are friends of mine. I can't go in.
These are friends of mine. It's a Holocaust. It's can't. But now Argonne Adams was interesting too because the Earth is a closed system and argon is one of those elements on the periodic tables you talk about that doesn't ever deteriorate, right? It doesn't. We have the same argon atoms.
It's inert. Yeah, it's inert. So it's not. You breathe in certain elements and they change. They go through a chemical change process. But argon is inert. It comes in. It goes out the same way argon atoms. And so breathe in argon and you breathe it out, and then it wafts around the room and then outside and then eventually around the world. And they can actually calculate how many argon atoms that you've breathed in that were once breathed in by dinosaurs, Jesus Christ, Joan of Arc. And it's this idea, again, that it's a metaphor for, again, the connection, you know, that what we are experiencing has a connection. It's not isolated into just me and this second, that there's this connection, past, present, and future. And it's a beautiful story. It's told by David Suzuki, who's the leading mind in Canada.
Yeah,
David's a brilliant scientist, and we were fortunate enough to get him in the film. And he's the one who, I think, broke that science.
Yeah, it's very cool. Argonne Adams. But then this is the part that actually I have to say, I don't know that I quite got this one. So walk me and other people who haven't seen.
Well, I'm a layman, so hopefully I got it.
Through random number generators.
So a random number generator think of it as a generator that spits out random numbers. So it's like flipping a coin. It's either going to flip heads or it's going to flip tails. It's going to flip heads or it's going to flip tails. So that's always random. You know, it just works randomly. And then they found that during emotional events through media, so that there's this collective human reaction. They discovered it during the O.J. Simpson trial when there was this collective wave of emotional energy now because media connects us all. And they saw that the random number generators stopped being random. In other words, those coins that were flipping suddenly went heads, 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 tails, 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 tails. They stopped being random. And they spike at the same time when this human emotional event happens. It also happened at 9/11. It happened at the tsunami. They've been studying this at Princeton. So you can go online. You can see Princeton's research on this. It's been years. It's hard to debate that something is going on. What exactly is going on, is still being talked about. But something happens. Something makes those random number generators go out of randomness.
And there's like 12 of them around the world.
There's 65 of them. 65 of them throughout the world. Yes.
And they can monitor them. And when a global emotional event happens, they stop being random. That's just freaky weird.
That's right. And not only that, the freakiest thing is that it looks like that they're slightly ahead of the event, as if they've had some kind of precognition about the event, as if they could predict that. So you see them go out of randomness slightly before, say, 9/11, and then fully out of random during the event. It's all, just doesn't fit the paradigm that we live in. And yet we know, again, experientially, that we intuit things. We, we feel things. And this is maybe the science. We're beginning to be on the fringe of the science behind it.
Yeah, or maybe the yogurt told them. But these are just some of these concepts that are discussed in the movie I Am. With you had Noam Chomsky, you had your dad in that. It was like the last thing your dad passed on not long after.
Yeah, my dad passed on. My dad used to run St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the largest pediatric cancer research institute. He helped found that with the great comic Danny Thomas. It was Danny's vision, and my dad and some other my dad's Lebanese, were Lebanese Americans. They supported Danny's vision, and yeah, he's in the movie. Along with that, like Howard Zinn, who passed on also, he was probably our greatest historian. We've got evolutionary biologists like Elizabeth Zatoris. Lynn McTaggart is a leading journalist who researches science. We've got Desmond Tutu, great, the great spiritual leader, Desmond Tutu. And, you know, when you get underneath it, everybody's saying the same thing. You know, we're all in this together, you know, and we operate our society as if we're not. We operate, you know, our society as if we're separate. We're separate from nature. We're separate from each other. And that's really outside of the operation manual. And that's why things are broken, you know.
I think I was looking at it thinking it's I am becomes we are. Like if you could, somewhere during the movie, I am becomes we are. And this idea of the other becomes of kind of a distant concept. The idea of they are, like other people are different than us, or that other, it really, that sort of evaporates, or at least
that's
there's
right.
a dotted
that's right.
line.
Division, that's exactly right. Division evaporates. It's an old mystic poem by Hafiz. We should not waste our time dividing God all day. So there really is no they. That's
right.
A lot of shows, you know, are all about how other people are all messed up, and we ignore the most important work is the personal work. The only true revolution is the personal revolution. You know, that's why Gandhi changed himself. He went and gave up his possessions, gave up his job. He lived with the people of India. He changed himself to feel what that was like. He didn't just say, hey, they're bad at the top. He said, let me feel what it's like to be an Indian, you know, one of my people, you know. And we so often point out, it's easier to point out and say, well, they're all messed up. Those Republicans are this way and those Democrats are that way. And really the true revolution, as Thomas Merton said, is the personal revolution. And there is no other. You know, a lot of people who see this film go, well, you showed it to the choir. How do other people feel? And I'd say, you know, I hate to say this, fellas, but we're all the choir. Everybody's playing
choir.
A note.
Yeah.
And everybody's in this band. So there really is no choir outside of all of us.
I like the way you phrased that. Now, so how much of your personal wealth, if you don't mind me asking, or how do you want to talk about what you gave away and what you sold off, or how you reinvested your accomplishments?
Yeah. Well, I'm still in process, and I don't have figures or numbers, but it's all in process of going. You know, I don't want to keep anything that I felt I got through my participation in a system when I was asleep. You know, this is how I think the system for me ought to function, or people in the system ought to function. You take what you need, whatever your needs are. If you got a big family, you have more needs. If you have kids in college, you have more needs. If you have an illness, you have more needs. I'm a single guy. I don't have a lot of needs. You know, I have a few passions, and those passions should be explored. I bike. I like to surf. And that's it. You know, nothing in nature takes more than it needs, as the film says. And when it does, it will become subject to the law and die off. You know, that's called cancer. You know, if a kudzu vine eats everything, which it will, it'll eventually die off. It may take 100 years, 1,000 years, but it will die off because there's going to be nothing left to eat. And diversity makes nature strong. And so my economic life is, I want it to be kindred with what I think actually are the laws of the universe, the moral laws as well as the physical laws. So,
well, and I want to tell you, I'm going to obey the law, and but I will tell you, I was actually I got a review copy of I Am, because it came and went at a theater. I couldn't get a chance to see it. And so they were nice enough to send me one. And then, I totally got that before I got the movie. I thought, well, okay, because Hollywood's always suspicious of bootlegging and stuff, and I know that that's a reality and stuff. But then after the movie, I thought, why am I returning this? I thought I should be like, instead of returning it, I should be handing it out. I should be bootlegging this movie.
I should
be handing it out to everybody I know. I won't. I'm going to send it back to you.
No, that's all right. No, I get it, and I appreciate that. And look, every cent that comes in from IAM is going to be returned to the common good, the healing, you know, the natural world, to helping people who, you know, in this tough time need help. No, absolutely. That's protectionary people, you know, like that are around me, but I don't even believe in, look, I think an artist should be able to, you know, present his vision to the world. But I don't really believe in the ownership of art. I think we participate in the ills and we say, hey, my art's more valuable. Give me more, pay me more. You know, artists used to be, you know, part of the, you know, the citizen structure. Someone would sponsor them and they would share their art, you know? And
well, I'm all for that. I was just giving you the needle a little bit, but it was just like one of those weird moments of like, oh yeah, that's right. We still have this whole rights thing. And I get that. So I'll put, it's in the mail. It's heading back to your people.
Share it, brother.
Okay. Here's Chris. Chris is from your home state, Waynesboro, Virginia. Hey, Chris, you're talking with Tom Shadyac. We'll just get one or two calls in here before the end. Go ahead.
Tom, it's great to hear from you again. I was lucky enough to work with your people on Evan Almighty.
Right on, yes. I remember Waynesboro well. We had a great time there.
Oh, yes. I was one of your security guards, actually. If you ever decide to do a film down here again, please hook us up again. I would love to work with you again.
I would do it in a heartbeat, man. You guys were great. Did you get a bike that day when we did the bike thing?
No, sir. The security guard didn't get one.
Okay. I apologize. That should have happened. We gave out bikes on the set.
Did you? Oh, that's cool.
Everybody but security got one.
Oh.
Sorry, brother. Sorry,
no worries, man.
I owe you a bike.
But I wanted to say that the thing that struck me most about you that really struck home was when you guys, I was guarding up at Madison. And your people hooked me up with food that I'd never had before. Just as you put it, you've lived security, now you're going to eat Hollywood.
That's great.
Well, thank you, Chris. You deserve it. You know, a lot of people on movie sets call, you know, the people who aren't stars, they call them extras, bring in the extras. I call them essentials.
Yeah.
You know, you're essential to us as a security guard. Those people that are in the background of scenes are essential because we don't and can't make movies without you.
Sure.
So I'm glad we fed you well, Chris.
I got to tell you something, too. Evan Almighty, although it wasn't treated as well by the critics as Bruce Almighty, I actually really enjoyed a lot of scenes in Evan Almighty. I thought it had gotten undervalued.
Well, Evan Almighty was reviewed for the budget. It wasn't reviewed for the movie. And we spent a lot of money. I wish I knew how to do it differently. The water effects just got out of hand. It wasn't like we were just tossing money to the wind. It just cost what it cost, and it was reviewed for the budget. But I think it's a lot of good stuff in Evan, and I'm happy with it.
Well, I loved what you did theologically with Bruce Almighty. I had a lot of great conversations on talk radio as a result of it, and for everything else you've done and will do in the future. Thank you. Look forward to following your career, and thank you for giving us an hour to talk about I Am tonight.
Enjoyed it, Ian. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it, and you keep rocking as well.
We will do that. That's what we do. God bless you, and have a great evening. Coming up, we will talk with Jeremy Wade about river monsters. They are everywhere. Giant fish swimming around your ankles. They are in our fresh water, rivers, and lakes, and they are huge. How big can they get? And how many of these giant species has he caught? And what are the ones that have already been gotten? And which are the ones that have gotten away? We'll talk about that with Jeremy Wade coming up next. And go take a look online right now at coasttocoastam.com for a slideshow of some of those, including the Amazonian Nessie, not to be missed. And then you can link up to Tom Shadyac there, too, under tonight's shows. You're going to want to see this movie where you can and get the DVD when it's available if you can't. And all of that coming up next with Jeremy Wade. Coast to Coast, this is Ian Puttett.